You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up another week, another possible government shutdown. We'll get the latest in the fight at the Capitol in just a bit.
More than a century ago, Congress passed laws to regulate companies from getting too large and dominating the market. The goal of these laws were to keep competition fair and prevent companies from manipulating the market and becoming monopolies.
While these laws have been around since the late 19th century, we've entered into a new era of really big corporations. Companies like Google and Amazon, whose size, scope, value, and power rival the Gilded Age monopolies that controlled industries like steel and oil.
Our next guest says it's time to revisit these laws in order to better regulate these companies. And if we don't, it might lead to deeper inequality and growing national.
Tim Wu is an author and the Julius Silver Professor of Law, Science, and Technology at Columbia Law School. His latest book is The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. Tim, welcome back to Central Time.
Pleasure to be here.
Let's take us back to the initial creation of these antitrust laws. They're passed in Congress, and then a bunch of years later, there are some presidents who actually try to enforce them. What was the intent, and what were the goals of these antitrust laws at the time?
Yeah, no, it's a good question and worth looking back at. So, you know, more than 100 years ago, the economy was a little bit like it is now. It became dominated by a number of monopolies, some of them well-known, like Standard Oil, some of them less well-known, like the Trust for Rubber, the Tobacco Trust, and so on and so forth, U.S. Steel Company. And the outrage and the reaction to this a transformation of the economy, which consolidated wealth into very few hands and was very hard on workers and employees, produced the antitrust laws, the Sherman Act. And, you know, that's more than a century and a half ago, but it represented this sort of restatement of American values, that this was an economy designed to be competitive and a country where democracy depended on diverse and decentralized power.
And we literally had a state of affairs where if things went on as they were, we would have had maybe only one oil company, period. Only one steel company, rubber company, tobacco company, so on. There, in a lot of key industries, there would not have been competition, right?
That was the way it was, actually. They went all the way towards merger, towards full monopoly. You know, the American economy was transformed, frankly, in the Gilded Age into this, like, one monopoly per industry. And the idea was that they were wise and you could trust them and, you know, it was an advance over competition, but it was a very big break from what had been the way America and, frankly, the whole West had operated.
And you've traced the history of how we think of antitrust laws, and we'll get into more of the original intent by them, but you see a big change led by, among other people, Robert Bork, best known for his Supreme Court nomination, ultimately unsuccessful. He and others promoted the idea, a really more narrow idea of what antitrust is, that all you looked at was the price benefit, the cost to consumers, and that you ignored everything else. Is that right?
That's exactly right. So there's a period, you know, basically from the presidency of Theodore Roosevelt into the 1980s, where antitrust is part of the American constitutional makeup. Big companies are routinely broken up or challenged. There's a whole many cases, Standard Oil, AT&T, IBM, you just go on, Alcoa. And in the 80s, we took a different attitude, inspired by Robert Bork, University of Chicago, that said, you know, the law has gone way too far, really. We should only be concerned about prices for consumer. And it, as I suggest in the book, enfeebled, weakened the law and led us back to where we had been.
What is the damage if we let these trusts, these monopolies, virtual or actual monopolies, thrive and go unchecked?
Yeah, I think that's something we're actually seeing firsthand. So the economic harm, the most straightforward, is you pay higher prices. And, you know, anyone who's looked at the pharmaceutical drug industry knows what that looks like. It'll just prices going up and up, or cable broadband services, or just cable TV up and up and up, you know, no competition. But I think there are deeper costs as well. For one, industries that are dominated by one or two companies tend to stagnate. For another, the concentration of economic power also concentrates wealth in a few hands. And finally, I think the political fallout is serious. When you have very concentrated, powerful industries, they're effective in getting their own will over what people tend to want. And, you know, you name an area, I'll show you a large group of people want something different, frankly, a majority, and an industry that gets its way. So I think our politics have been distorted, even corrupted by concentrated private power.
Talking to Tim Wu about his new book, The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. A big concern you point to in the book for the original trust busters was this idea that once you got to a certain point, you could keep other people out of your business. So with Standard Oil, oh, you wanted to make your own oil? Well, we've got all the pipelines. We've got all the refineries. We will crush you. Is that a big concern that not only does this monopoly company control the prices, they control the price of admission if you want to play in that industry?
Yeah, that's a good reading of the book. I think this is something deeply underestimated by economists, which is the ability of an industry, once it gets there, to build a moat or a wall or a buried entry, and defend itself. You know, a company like AT&T was virtually immune to competition. In our times, you know, the idea of taking on a tech company like Facebook or Google seems like complete suicide, not to mention the wireless carriers or the airlines. So, you know, I think this is one of the problems, and you end up with a very different kind of economy than was once the American vision, which was one where, you know, people come here to start companies, a land of opportunity, you know, move here and take your shot. It's very different when you face all these barriers and obstacles created by other players.
Now we've got this big technology industry built on the foundation of the internet, and it seemed like the idea was out there that, well, this is a different kind of economy. These are different kind of businesses. Maybe we need the scale that a big company can provide. These are different. We don't need to think about them in an antitrust kind of way.
Yeah, I would suggest that, you know, for the first 20 years of the tech industries, and I mean Silicon Valley's latest incarnation, the web companies, a fairly rosy view of them. A company like Facebook or Google, you know, they can do no wrong. They're really well-meaning guys. I think, but increasingly people start to say, what's going on here? This used to be the most competitive industry in the United States. This was the golden goose, the promise of America and the frontier. And, you know, what's happened? It's really about a couple of big guys. And if you're lucky, you get bought out. But otherwise, it's hopeless. And, you know, it's a cycle. You know, what was yesterday's open season becomes an impenetrable monopolized industry, which is why we need the antitrust laws.
And we just saw some emails disclosed, I think it was by a member of parliament in Great Britain, and it involved emails within Facebook saying, yeah, these companies will give access to this information, but these companies are kind of competitors. Let's lock them out of this stuff. Do you see a parallel between that and saying, yeah, let's not let these competitors use our, say, oil pipelines?
Yeah, I think it's very similar. You know, I think Facebook in our time is one of the poster childs for the curse of bigness. You know, not only have they managed to keep out or buy out their competitors, they've also shown the danger of a company that regards itself as above the law. That was one of the real concerns of the original antitrust law. The idea that private companies could become more powerful than government, and in fact, sort of immune to government. And if you look at all these leaks of emails and so forth, it's clear that Facebook has thought it can buy itself out of any problem. Clear they also have been very risky with American democracy, running great risks with American democracy, allowed themselves to be hacked by the Russians, all because they just wanted to dominate their industry and make money. So I think that they show, along with, you know, like pharmaceuticals, the pressing need for us to rethink some of these old ideas about private power and its control.
We're talking to Tim Wu. He's an author and professor at Columbia Law School. His latest book is The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. He's with us to talk about why he says antitrust laws should be updated in an era of big companies like Facebook, Google, Amazon, and many more.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Should the government break up companies like Amazon and Google? Do you think these companies should be regulated at all? Does the size of these companies impact how and if you use them? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Darrell Conner.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about the role of antitrust laws in an era of big companies that dominate the technology, pharmaceutical, e-commerce, and other markets. Tim Wu is with us, author and professor at Columbia Law School. His new book is The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age.
And you can join the conversation by calling 800-642-1234. What do you think of the influence these big companies have? Do you think it's a problem with regulation, or do you think that this is how the market works? What questions do you have about our current antitrust laws? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or comment on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Tim, getting back to the early days of antitrust laws in the United States, so you write that it was kind of a historical fluke that they started to be enforced. This law, the Sherman Antitrust Act, was passed in Congress, and then it just kind of sat there, nice piece of paper. And then William McKinley was assassinated, and Teddy Roosevelt comes in and starts to bust the trusts. Is there a Teddy Roosevelt out there today who's going to take up this mantle?
I mean, I sure hope so. I give Theodore Roosevelt a lot of credit for having that virtue of courage. You know, it's amazing to look back at it. He came to the presidency and immediately took on the most powerful figures, private figures of his time. First J.P. Morgan, then John Rockefeller. I think many politicians would have considered that suicide. You know, these guys are so powerful. And he's a Republican. The Republican Party had sort of allied itself with big business. But no, he thought that this is a democracy, and if we don't do something in this period of incredible inequality, the people are going to turn to socialism or communism or anarchism or fascism. You know, people were angry. And, I think there's a lesson in our time. I think people are angry now. They don't see this economy working for them, and they want someone to do something. And so we need a Roosevelt to ride and really take aim at the private power in our time.
Larry in Milwaukee called in, wants to know, are there any groups or organizations that everyday citizens can join to fight monopolies? Are you aware of anything like that, Tim?
No, that's a great question. You know, the Open Markets Institute is a think tank in Washington. They're very concerned with this issue. You know, they're kind of trying to bring back the populist side of antitrust. You know, there was a period where this was a major political issue for both parties. 1912 election was almost entirely focused on antitrust. So yes, I think this is an issue people care about. Open Markets Institute is a good place to start.
We heard from Brandy on Facebook. Brandy writes, companies that focus on increasing profits every year worry me. Eventually, they get to the point where they have to cut quality and employee pay. It's a model that's like a pyramid scheme, and it hurts society in the long run. And you write, Tim, speaking of that phrase in your title, The Curse of Bigness, that companies, once they hit a certain size, seem to get less efficient, and some of those downsides that Brandy mentions can start to happen.
No, absolutely. And I think, it's just a function of excessive size. All of us know huge institutions that lose sort of their direction. And this is something, one of the key figures in my book is Louis Brandeis, the Supreme Court Justice, but antitrust activist. That's really his, to my mind, most important role in the 20th century. And he had this real concern that when business got too big, it lost a sense of humanity. It started caring about things that don't really matter to the country, but matter only to itself. And I think we've gone very far in that direction. And really, we have an economy that's not working for people anymore.
Let's look at a company like Amazon. A lot of people are familiar with it, like it or not. They may buy stuff from it. It's ended up being a service that for the consumer, it provides fairly cheap stuff, more or less, very conveniently. And the everyday consumer might say, hey, wait a minute, let's not mess with that. I use it and I like it.
Yeah, the only question is whether if you accept convenience, and everyone loves convenience, it's hard to fight it. That we also have to accept monopoly, and that's where I draw the line. And you know, I'm perfectly willing to accept advances, but I think we have to be aware of the costs. And the long story is that when we allow just a few companies to rule something like retail, they do tend to concentrate profit just a few areas and leave the rest of the country behind, including retailers, including entrepreneurs who might have a better mousetrap. The only place to sell it is Amazon. Amazon can copy it. So, you know, we have to be a little more aware and just not single-mindedly focused on, you know, who gets me the better deal.
And yeah, you're concerned about inequality in the United States in the Gilded Age and what you're calling the new Gilded Age. And we see a lot of these high-tech businesses bringing huge economic booms in certain urban areas and a lot of rural areas in particular being left behind. Is that partly a story of monopolies and antitrust?
It is partially. I think, Louis Brandeis again. One of the things he believed in was a country of regions. He grew up in Louisville, and in his childhood, it was a place people move, start businesses, vibrant center. And today, it just seems like we've got this winner-take-all situation. Amazon, I live in New York, and a new office in New York. We don't need more, big businesses here in New York. We have everything. I think we can do better. There's advantages, I guess, but this is supposed to be a country with an economy that serves citizenship, that is a place where people come and be the best they can. And I think our economy has really stood in the way of everything America can be and everything American regions could be. I would love to live in a country where people thought of this as a place full of opportunity throughout the entire country, not just in one or two hotspots.
Talking to Tim Wu about his new book, The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. Let's talk on a practical level what a new antitrust effort might look like. And let's start with how the government reviews mergers or acquisitions of one company by another. What are we doing now? What would you like to see change?
Yeah, this is the priority. For some unknown, under the intoxication of excessively technical economic reasoning, we've allowed so many industries to become just, three or four players who easily cooperate. The airlines, pharmaceuticals, I go on, even fertilizer, for farmers. And what we need is a law. In fact, it would be better to have a congressional law that makes it clear the burden is on the merging parties to state how this is going to benefit the economy as opposed to, what they can get away with. Because we've just had 20 years of allowing all kinds of mergers that have been obviously bad for everyone except for the companies involved. And, everyone knows this. It's just one of these things that has to be changed.
Yeah. Are there particular examples of mergers or, again, Facebook buying Instagram is one example you give in your book where you think, hey, maybe a government regulator should have stepped in and just plumb stopped it?
I mean, how much time do you have on this show? I'll just give a couple examples. We let Ticketmaster buy Live Nation or vice versa, the greatest, so that, Ticketmaster is the for concerts and prices have gone up. The airlines have merged down to three airlines. Not known to many people, beer has merged, non-craft beer, into a duopoly. As I said earlier, fertilizer has merged, and farm chemicals have merged to put prices up for farmers. A pharmaceutical industry has merged and jacked prices with wild demand, and no real control on pharmaceutical pricing at all. Just across the line, and people who know particular industries know more than this. T-Mobile and Sprint are trying to merge right now so they can raise their prices. And it's just extraordinary that we've allowed this to happen. I think the people in business are like, I can't believe we get away with this stuff. We know why we're merging. We want to raise the prices, but I don't believe they let us do it. But for some reason, we have.
You write in the book, you look back at the post-World War II period, and some American analysts looked at Germany and the rise of Hitler and said, hey, one of the preconditions we think was the rise of these trusts, these single companies in many cases that would dominate a whole industry. They saw that as part of the puzzle. Do you worry about the effect of mergers, of huge corporations unchecked by government and their effect on society and representative government?
Absolutely. In the post-war region, as you suggested, bipartisan in Europe, too, everyone said, we need to realize that allowing corporate monopolies was a big player in the rise of fascism. Hitler was fortified in his efforts and consolidated his power with the help of IG Farb and other German monopolists. So we need to break up the German monopolies, which they did, and we need to break up our own companies unless we have the same kind of problems. And I think, you have a tendency when you have a concentrated economy towards more extreme politics, towards the rise of extremist politicians, which we see around the world, and the real danger that you have so much private concentrated power that if it ever starts to ally itself with government, actually this is something you see in China very right now, you have all the makings of a fascist state. And, you know, that's a big word, fascism, but I think we need to be constantly aware of the danger of returning and remaking some of the most serious errors of the 20th century.
And Tim, I think a lot of us don't want to talk about the 2020 presidential election yet. Let's talk about it. Do you see this? Do you see anyone being out there who's going to raise this as an issue in political campaigns?
You know, I think they need to. On the Democrat, both on the Republican and Democratic side, people are looking for answers. I think one of the reasons Donald Trump had a lot of success is he said he was going to take on big business. He said he was going to take on pharmaceutical pricing. He also blamed things on foreign enemies and immigrants, which I don't agree with. You know, that was part of why he was successful. And so I think it's important for candidates who are going to get somewhere to realize that people are not happy with this kind of economy and realize that part of the American vision is a decentralized economy. You know, I've heard some candidates talk about, obviously Bernie Sanders was out there, Elizabeth Warren was out there, but I think it's spreading further into the Democratic field, and that this kind of understanding of what people need, the kind of economic justice that matters, should be a big thing in the 2020 election.
Tim, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Tim Wu is an author and the Julius Silver Professor of Law, Science, and Technology at Columbia Law School. His latest book, it's what we've been talking about, it's called The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age. He joins us today to talk about why he thinks the government should take greater steps to regulate mega companies from the pharmaceutical industry to high-tech companies like Amazon and Google.